Before we get started with the next episode, I would just like to say welcome and happy new year, everyone, 2021. It's starting off pretty rough, I gotta say. I think a lot of us had some hopes that by turning the calendar, you know, we might get to leave behind some things, and we are going to be able to, but there are still a lot of challenges ahead for us. Healthcare workers, nurses, healers, people in the community taking care of one another, there's going to be a lot of opportunity for us to do some good. That I really enjoyed this upcoming episode where I talk with Tamara and Kathy about Empty Plate. This is a book that really looks at a different way of looking at how to care for yourself holistically. I hope some people check out the book after this. It's really great. I have got a copy for the hospice nurses over here that I work with over in Eugene. I really appreciate all the work they did. I have definitely a lot of plans for myself to really take care of myself. It's so important for those of us who are out there healing to really, it's time for us to start considering ourselves first. And I know a lot of people have a hard time doing that, especially a lot of my peers, but there is some really good lessons in that. And I'm concerned that if we don't take sort of the advice that's just kind of going through the ether right now, I know you hear it too. So, thank you so much for joining us again, and happy 2020, regardless of how this goes. I'm really glad to be sharing this with you all, and look forward to sharing more episodes with you for the rest of the year. Hello and welcome to another episode of Revolution RN. I'm your host, Paul, and I'm here with two guests again that I have a relationship with through the Oregon Holistic Nurses Association. I talked a little bit last episode about holistic care, self-care. A lot of these topics have come up, at least internally for me, is because a lot of my peers, healthcare providers, are struggling right now, and we're looking for ways to manage because the work just keeps on coming. And part of it setting boundaries first, but also some of it starts at home. And so I have two guests here, Tamara Carr and Kathleen Bell, who are both here to talk about their book, Empty Plate, Food Sustainability and Mindfulness. I've gotten a chance to go through this book, and it's, I'd like to go into it, but let's first start by, introducing the authors here. So, let's start with Tamara. Tamara, are you okay introducing yourself?
Sure. I'm Tamara Carr. I have a PhD in holistic nutrition. I'm board certified in holistic nutrition. I'm a past board member of the Oregon Holistic Nurses Association, and I have the esteemed honor of being one of their special advisors.
And also we have Kathleen Bell with us as well.
And I met Tamara through Oregon Holistic Nurses Association. I am a holistic nurse certified in the year 2011 at an advanced level because I have an advanced practice degree. I was a certified nurse midwife and a women's healthcare nurse practitioner. I've been a nurse for 48 years. Have been mostly based in maternal and children's health, and joined OHNA, the Oregon Holistic Nurses Association, in 2013, I believe. Joined the American Holistic Nurses Association in 2011, have held positions in both of those organizations, and function as the educational advisor in a special advisory role to the board now, as well as Tamara. she and I met one another through the Portland chapter of ANHNA, A-H-N-A, the American Holistic Nurses Association. We say these words, ANHNA and ONA, and everybody doesn't know what they mean. So we met one another at a chapter meeting where Tamara came to Portland and cooked for us. And it was kind of off to the races from there because we've kept in touch all that time. And now we've worked together.
What was the meal?
Tamara, what did you cook? You brought food for an army, I remember.
Yeah, I did nachos. So we had organic purple corn chips. I browned meat. I had a vegetarian offering. I ground up cheese, minced up vegetables. Mostly terrified the nurses in the front row as I was talking and waving my arms all around with a 12-inch chef knife in my hand. So I'm sure that there were some that thought they were going to have to, you know, perform some kind of surgery before the night was over.
It was an indelible impression, I have to say. And I actually write about that cooking demonstration in the foreword of the book.
Well, yeah, and so it's, you know, for a lot of people this time of year, especially after, you know, after the holiday season, getting prepared for New Year's, a lot of us, you know, we set some intentions usually for the year. And some of those are, you know, diet, exercise, and, so a lot of us are looking for ways to get healthy, but a lot of people have a different idea what that is. You guys created a book that essentially asks you to question what health is to yourself, mm-hmm. and how to incorporate it wholly, not only with the food you eat, but the way you interact with it, the way you interact with the environment. How did this book start?
Oh my gosh, Paul. Way back when the dinosaurs were still roaming the earth, I had an idea. And the idea led to our journey with food and then the cookery book. So Empty Plate is an extension of those two previous books. And when I wrote the two previous books, Kathy was in the background going, you have to write another one. You have to do. And so when it came time to have to do, of course, I had to do it with her because she was really an amazing guiding grounding force for this book. I had all kinds of ideas of what I wanted to talk about. I could see how the patterns were connected and interwoven and how we were missing the mark in so much of our conversation about diet if we didn't include these other components. And Kathy was the one who could really bring my thoughts into a crystalline shape that allowed us to see and to explore. So how does a book happen? Kathy, how does a book happen? I think it just happens.
Really? And if you, I don't know how much of a reader you are, Paul, but I'm a big reader. And one of the best things about being retired is I get a chance to read things I want besides the things I sort of need to read for work. Mozart's Starling is one of my favorite books that I read in this past year. And at the beginning of Mozart's Starling, the writer says that one of the questions she gets asked all the time is, where do you get the idea for a book? And her answer to this is brilliant. And that is, the idea for a book isn't an idea for a book. You don't like sit around and wait for an idea for a book to jump into your head. One day you wake up and there's a book there, right? One day, all of a sudden, it's just there. You're not looking for an idea for a book. A book appears to you. And when Tam created her course earlier this year, her all online course that she teaches with through her website, she did enormous amount of research and preparation and organization to put this course together in how many increments, Tam?
There's over 30 videos and presentations.
Well, when you started the first time, was it 10? Was it 12? Something like that?
Yeah, we started out with 12 live presentations, right. And then I just kept building videos, 20-minute videos. Just did two of them to add into the course here this last week. So
when she was done, I said to her, okay, so you did all this work. Now you need to make this into a book. You need to write a book that goes with the course. I've been an educator for a long, long time. I like textbooks. So this isn't really a textbook, but it was created as an adjunct to supplement the work that Tam did in her online course, which I sort of bounced in and out of all the time because that's what I do in Tam's life. I bounce in and out. And so she got going and she wrote chapter one on food and she wrote chapter two on sustainability. And then she called me up and said, okay, now I'm at the mindfulness part. And I really wish that you would write this chapter because you know a lot more about this sort of thing than I do. Because I also have a certification to teach meditation. I didn't say that in the introduction, but whatever. Mm-hmm. And so then I said, well, okay, this is chapter three. And I have to see chapter one and I have to see chapter two. And chapter three has to make sense as chapter one and two begin to flow into the body of a book. So chapter one and two kind of morphed around a little bit with suggestions and changes. And chapter three came about. And by the end of chapter three, Tamara said, okay, in for a penny, in for a pound. We're doing the rest of this together.
Yeah. It's great. I mean, it's really great. I mean, at least when I care about what goes in my body. I care about what goes in my children's body. I care about what goes into, you know, the community that I live in, into the ants and plantimal lives and all these other things. And sometimes people, you know, really don't really understand why start this type of journey. And you guys seem to manage to like find a, I mean, you guys obviously are on this journey, but you guys found a way to support different ideas on that idea.
It comes from being the way we were raised. You know, I don't want to age ourselves, but we grew up with families that required us to think with a whole brain, to problem solve, to be able to work our way through situations, to see the interconnection. In my particular background, growing up surrounded by nature, whether it was because my dad was a logger or because we were living on a ranch, but it was a very different lifestyle. And you saw that nature was intimately connected with how agriculture is done. And you saw how agriculture is intimately affected by commerce. And you saw all of these things when you're looking at patterns and you listen to people talk about the aspects of their lives. And then as an adult, I looked at food and I went, well, how come this is so freaking hard for us? Why is it that we have these staggering levels of anorexia and nervosa and bulimia, and now we have these eating disorders that are raging through male athletes, especially younger male athletes, and we've got people on fad diets and now sick with things like SIBO, small bacteria overgrowth, because they've been over inoculating with foods that are fermented foods. And I thought, how, you know, this is crazy. This is crazy. I've always thought the whole thing was crazy. And one of the people that was a technical advisor for us, who's also my mentor and a friend of Kathy's, is Dr. Elizabeth Lipsky. And she did a fantastic job of not once, but I think three times, she would smack me upside the head in some way or another and say to us, you know, think about what the word diet means. Diet is a phenomenal word. And so I got out the dictionary and looked up diet, and I really looked at all of the definitions of diet. And when you see that diet means people, it means community. These aren't how we think about diet. We think of diet as being deprivation. We don't think right. about it being right. what holds us together, what bonds us, what binds us. And just like we look at one particular science, in the case of nutrition or a medicine, we look at it as a single standalone modality, that it is all encompassing all there is. But the reality is that health is a wagon wheel, and it involves so much more than just one perspective. And our health is affected profoundly by our environment. The statistics and the research show that for people with the genes for Alzheimer's, It's our diet and our lifestyle that have the greatest effect on whether or not we activate those genes that lead towards the dementia and the brain diseases. It's our lifestyle that helps us keep from having those massive heart attacks, not because we're outside pumping weights and overexerting ourselves. It's because we're taking those small moments to really look at the intricacy of the bark of a pine tree, or to take a deep breath of the air and feel the salt tingle on our tongue from the ocean. It's those things that have been part of our creation from the time of our beginning that we have gotten into a reductionist. I love it when Kathy wrote about the reductionist idea of science, that we try and put it into this little thimble glass and say, this is all there is, when in reality, we have this massive cosmos of information and tools around us.
And this all resonated beautifully with me and my whole practice style of holism, because you cannot make all the designations and differentiations that Tamara just said in her little piece right there. She talked about sustainability, and she talked about science, strict science, and she talked about research, and she talked about experiment, and she talked about community, and she talked about family, and she talked about culture. And we make all of these designations and distinctions as if they're separate from one another, which is totally and completely wrong, number one. And number two, ridiculous. It's ridiculous that we compartmentalize all of this and then decide that if we need to change, quotes, one thing, something, a thing, we focus all on that. And because everything is really connected, it starts to have all of these effects in different places in our lives. It has effect in our relationship, in our work, in how much money we're spending on gas, and what size our clothes are, and you know how our kids are relating to us. And we're like, whoa, wow, look at this. This is one thing, and it's not one thing. It's never one thing. Nothing is ever one thing, because everything's connected. And that was really my whole, every time Tam likes to go down some, whatever the newest interesting tangent was for Tam, they're like, okay, and reel it back in. How does this connect to where we are on the path, where we're going? How does this become part of the larger whole that we inhabit every day, every moment of our lives? We inhabit a space in this larger whole.
Yeah, and it's like, it's not all at once. I think that's what I really get, at least at from going through the book, is it's about setting that intention and trying something and then just acting, you know, using that as a step.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, life actually is bigger than that, Paul, because the intention itself is an energetic force. So you think that you're having the intention and you're putting the energy behind it, but setting the intention and understanding that the intention itself is the energetic force, you can let go of it and then ride it. Ride the energy of that intention. That's an amazingly different way to think about intention, so that it's not really in or of your control. It may be of your creation. You generated or made up or thought up the intention, but let it go and let the energy of everything that it's connected to carry you. That's the amazing part.
And you know, I'm grounded sometimes a little differently than other folks because of my life experiences. I was brought up where you did what you needed to do. You did what you had to do. The calves always had to be fed. The lambs had to be taken care of. Nature wasn't going to wait for you for it to be a convenient time. And so there was a lesson taught about how to see what needed to be done and how to just do it without overthinking it, without rationalizing or whining about it. And that's really what our lives are about. There's countless things that we just simply have to do them. It's snowing outside and you have to drive through it, you do it. If there's a baby being born, you haven't got any choice. It's going to be born. And when we just step back for a minute and let life happen, we can also find it's much easier to navigate through things because we're an observer, as Kathy has said so many times, and we're able to pick and choose and, that's not, you know, as my son said this morning, not my biscuit, not my gravy, you know, move it on. And so that's probably one of the hardest lessons for people to learn right now, because we have so much stimulus from so many directions. And we have these expectations, and no time in history have these things ever been part of the human existence before. To be able to look at a meal and freak out over how much sugar is in it, or whether it's gluten-free, or whether it's organic, or whether it's got this in it or that in it. We never before have been in a position where we could not sit with people and eat. And we have always eaten as a community, whether it's with our family members or with our closest clan members within our group. We eat together because there was safety in that, and there was conversation, and there was connection. And we've gotten away from any of those kinds of things that allow us to slow down, to stop, and just take a deep breath and let ourselves bob along in the little inner tube that's floating on the water of life. And Kathy has been phenomenal at helping me to just take a deep breath. There's been several times she said, "Oh, I'm so glad to hear you're back. You're not off on a tangent again." But, you know, that being able to just take a breath like that and accept what is allows us to have resiliency. And if you don't have resiliency, then your immune system suffers, your nervous system suffers, you don't sleep well at night, you come down with everything that's out there, you begin to disintegrate. And when I was standing in that room at the conference with all of the nurses at the Oregon Holistic Nurses Conference and heard these heart-wrenching words coming from them about what they wanted to get out of the conference. They wanted healing. They wanted rest. They wanted, you know, over and over again. I was stunned because as a holistic nutritionist, I just had not encountered that before. I come from this on a different level of, you know, we look at food and go, yay, an opportunity to cook and eat, and we don't experience the burnout and the exhaustion that the nurses have every day as part of their life. And that was probably, you had asked me earlier about how this book come about. I remember talking with Kathy and others at the Oregon Holistic Nursing Society about how stunned I was that the nurses were so exhausted. They were holistic nurses and they had all of these tools available and they were so exhausted because they're not doing self-care. And so Kathy took me on a wonderful journey that was part of a journey I'd done with other nurses about how grueling the world is and how it's changed for nurses and how important it is for us to share this message.
It's really great that you found each other, because I definitely see where a board certified meditation specialist comes into play here. Because yeah, it's like you think of, like, especially when you're, you know, when you practice meditation, you ask those, a lot of sort of the intention in that is asking those deeper questions. And it's like that with, you know, diet and nutrition and taking care of yourself, like asking that bigger question as the why am I doing this? Why? And continually asking that why.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the answer to the why can change, you know, day to day. But the fact is that when you're asking the why, you at least are acknowledging that there's always choice involved. So one of my favorite things about writing in the book was to blow the doors off the definition of what we call nutrition. I personally believe from all of my training and studies that nutrition is not just our food. Nutrition is what we need to nourish ourselves. And this is what Tam heard when those nurses said they were starving. They were starving. They were starving for meaning. They were starving for healing. They were starving for rest. They were starving for food for their souls, if you will, that wasn't necessarily food to eat. everything that comes to us in the way of experience, everything that comes to us in the way of sensation or knowledge or sensory information, as well as food, our bodies have to process and decide, are they nourishing? Are they toxic? Are they draining? Does this support me? Does this deplete me? And our bodies do that deciding whether we're conscious of it or not. And my aim in writing about it was to bring, elevate our sense of consciousness about, you know what? I have a lot to do with how I feel about this. A lot to do with it. Because there are things that are happening to me that I say aren't my fault and I'm a victim and this is happening willy-nilly and it's overwhelming and it's all a million things that you'll hear people complain about or say. And if you just say, okay, I hear all that. But just stop a minute, take a breath. What are you allowing to penetrate right now? What are you allowing yourself? What are you being fed with? What is nourishing for you? What is depleting for you? What is toxic for you? And every single day, we have conscious choices to make about those things. So the mindfulness piece of the book isn't just mindfulness about food that goes in your mouth or things that you drink for nutrition. It is about how everything can be nourishment or not.
And when we talked about sustainability, one of the things that drives me crazy is people like to take words and use only one definition of that word for their own personal agendas. And we wrote that out and we said, let's really look at what hope and joy and sustainability and food mean and explored that in the book as well. Because as Kathy said, everything is part of our food. It's the energy, the sunlight, the colors that make the photosynthesis happen, that create the sugar that becomes the glucose, that allows a maple tree to provide us with golden pools of syrup that are reminders of the summer before. We are intimately connected with our environment and with our nature. Around us, and nature feeds us, and people don't always have an opportunity to explore nature. Our understanding of sustainability needs to be more than just what's happening with our environment when we're looking at particular political viewpoints. We really need to be considering what's sustainable for us, and that sustainability involves our water, it involves our air, it involves our sleep, it involves the color that we have on our walls that helps us to feel a particular way, energize us, or to help us to relax. Our lives, in order to be sustainable, we have to really open ourselves up, like Bruno did when he opened himself up to the ideas of what God and the cosmos and the stars were all about back in the very first days of science. Mm-hmm. We need to open ourselves up to allowing ourselves to be sustainable and to be nourished from everything, not just one thing.
I really like the way, the way you describe it, it's almost like, instead of interacting with the world where the world creates challenges and you have to overcome them, uh-huh. It's almost like a way of like you're imagining that world of health and creating it alongside with it in your own body.
We have to. We are the captains of our own journey and vessel and where we're going. If we let somebody else take control of the wheel, we're going to end up places we don't want to be. And I have my medical oversight for years has been a family nurse practitioner. And I think one of the hardest lessons that I had to learn when I was working with her is that I couldn't care more than my clients did, that if they didn't care about their health, then it didn't matter how much I wanted them to succeed. And I flipped that coin around when we were working on this book and Kathy and I talked about it and thought, you know, If I'm saying that to other people, then I have to look at that for me. And what does that mean for me? If I don't care as much about my health as my family does or somebody else does, then it's never going to be sustainable. And how do I go about caring? Means I have to find those avenues, those instruments, those tools that allow me to travel in comfort on this journey. And that means for me, that's very different than it might be for you or somebody else, but we have control. And we're only victims if we allow somebody else to guide our ship.
What were some interesting directions that you went in the book that you didn't expect to go into or turn into?
Well, I tell you that this was early on in writing, because I came into the book somewhere around chapter 3 and then went backwards and then went forwards again. And Liz Lipsky at some point went on a trip, camping trip or something.
With me.
Sam. Yeah. And she came back, and Liz is an experienced writer, a marvelous educator, and I have so much respect for her. She's everything about her. She's just so bright and so good. And she comes back and she says, Liz says, we have to make principles. I said, what? She said, well, she said that if you're going to organize this book in a way that is most useful for people to just pick it up and look for something that they can find, not in the contents or not in the index, but the principle. So one of the principles is sustainability. One of the principles is mindfulness. We had those things. But she said, every single chapter, you need to pull out what are the guiding principles that you're talking about within the chapter. And that was huge for me, because one of the ways in education and nursing education that I've been involved in a long time, and community education and public education and every millions of kinds of education that have to do with health, is concept-based. So, Paul, when you were in nursing school, did your curriculum go on concept-based?
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
Okay. Well, concept-based is a pretty new form of curriculum. It wasn't always that way. But I'll tell you, when it got there, I thought, bingo, we finally have arrived at something that is sensible. Because you can take a four-year-old and teach them the concept of oxygenation, all right? And you can expand that all the way up to somebody who works in ECMO in the ICU. If you understand the basic concept of oxygenation, you can keep building on it. So one of the things that Liz helped me do was pull these out. And I'm sort of better at this line of thinking than Tam was initially, because it was my training, teaching concept-based. So for each chapter, what I initially wanted to do was get the concepts down, because this is how I'm used to building curriculum, get the concepts down and then build what I wanted onto them. But that wasn't how the process evolved, and it certainly wasn't what Tam wanted to do at all. Tam wanted to just write. And so she would write, and I would write, and we would do our little mind melds that went on all the time. And then as I saw what we both had sort of amalgamated in this wonderful chemistry that we had, then the principles would become clear. They would pop out at me, just like somebody, I don't know what, was saying to me, I was channeling them from a voice or something. And the principles became alive in each chapter. And then the best thing in my mind was that at the end of the book, in chapter 6, what I wanted to do was pull out all the principles that we hadn't said yet. Things that had gone through every chapter, like Tam had mentioned some of them, joy, and
hope
and regenerativity and hope and things that that underlaid every single one of the chapters. You could find them, but we hadn't said them yet out loud or made them their own list. And so chapter 6 just turned into literally the overlying in building a curriculum. You call these running threads through the fabric of the book. These were threads that were woven all the way through the book. And that's what we close with. And as we were trying to figure out what to call chapter 6, you know, all this had been about building a meal on the plate, and all of our little graphics are how this comes on the plate and this comes on the plate. And I'm like, okay, meal's over. What do you do then? You eat dessert. So our last chapter is dessert. It's what we call the sweet rewards in the book, because by the time we get all the way to the end, we're pulling all of these beautiful principles that have been all the way from page 1 to the end. And for me, I didn't know how chapter six was going to go. I didn't know how we were going to end. All this sort of evolved when we got there, but it turned out beautiful in my mind. It just did.
How would you so if somebody's decided that, they're like on that pathway to look for how to nourish themselves and the world they live in and get higher concepts on healing themselves, how can they use this book as a tool?
Well, you start with page one, and you have to recognize from that step forward that you have to slow yourself down and throw away your preconceived notions. We have tons of medical myths, of nutrition myths, of ideas of what is health that muddy the waters, that are the rocks that kick us off of the wagon in our journey. And so from page one, you begin that we're talking to you about making mindful choices, about making mindful decisions, about taking a moment of pause. I don't know how many times we said, take a moment of pause throughout the book. So if you're in a place in your life where you are the ever ready bunny going like crazy 14 miles an hour, and you're not even taking a deep breath at any given time throughout your day, you may not be able to do anything more than read one section at a time, because we broke it down into bite-sizable sections. You don't have to, these are massive chapters. There's only six chapters in the book, but there's a lot of pages in those chapters. And the reason you can get away with that is because we broke it down into sometimes just two or three paragraphs of an idea. And we interspersed history and anecdotes and personal stories so that it was a personal read. It was something that you could connect with. One of the things that my nephew has said about my books is that they're perfect bathroom books. You can take them in and you read a section while you're in the bathroom and then be able to pick it up again and not have completely lost track of where you left off. And at first I was kind of annoyed with that idea. Yeah. But as I thought more and more about it, I thought, yes, that's the pause. If all you can do is read for a few minutes because of the kids, the husband, the dog, the cat, the work or whatever, if all you have is that 5 minutes, that it changes your perspective, your focus, then we've accomplished what we needed to do and make this possible for more and more people. Because one of the problems we face is it's why 90% plus of our diets fail and by year two is because it's not sustainable. Asking people to make all these elaborate changes in their life is something that they might be able to do for a month, 2 months, 3 months. But if you've ever experienced the FODMAP diet, for example, or one of the very restrictive diets that are necessary for something else, what happens is you reach a point in time where you just go, oh, screw this. This isn't sustainable. I just want to eat a piece of bread and leave me alone. And that's what happens constantly is then we're in this guilt cycle because we failed. And it's not when we go at this journey in a different way. Lewison and Clark didn't make it all the way across the United States on their feet and by paddling canoes and rafts and later on horses because they said, oh, I'm going to do it all in one day. It took them years to make that journey and what they learned from it about themselves, about their colleagues, about their family. And that's how we need to approach the empty plate. Our plate is overflowing with all kinds of stuff that isn't nourishing. And we need to scrape it clean and start over again, putting those things on that really do make us feel good when we're through eating them.
I love that. Yeah, I mean, some of the best books I've, that I really can go back to yeah, or just the, it's a, I read a piece at a time and I can sit with that idea for a long time. I love that. I love that concept.
And it doesn't really matter where you start. That's the other thing. Because these concepts are so foundational, they're so basic, it doesn't matter what order they're in. You can read it from back to front or front to back, like Tam said, start on page one. If you get stuck someplace, put it down, pick it up, and start somewhere else. Maybe you'll really get, all of a sudden, you'll just be caught right up in the time and nature chapter. And what does that have to do with food anyway, right? You know?
And we heard that from people. About it. Yeah, we heard that from people who were doing our reviews. It's like, oh, I'm reviewing chapter 4. It's about color. What does that have to, how? And so our reviewers, it's been great seeing the response from the reviewers in the last few weeks after they've gotten their print copies. And they're going, oh my gosh, I only read just this little piece. I had no idea. And it's like seeing stars sparkle in little kids' eyes when they realize the magic of snowflakes. To see that where this book is allowing people to get excited again about everything in our lives. I mean, who knew that goldenrod and asters grew together in nature because those are the two colors that hummingbirds and bees see the best. We just thought they were beautiful together, yet we wouldn't have honey flavored by those amazing flowers that have been part of our culture since before Neolithic times, if it wasn't for the combination of those colors. So we put color in. We talk about the amazing healing properties of light therapy, of the use of green light for migraines, the use of red light lasers in healing wounds. We talk about the natural killer cells that really go crazy when people are camping in nature and having time in nature, especially they did a study with cancer patients. And so, you know, we throw all of this in because it gives you that something different to read, something more interesting, but it also shows the connection, just how connected everything is to us in our journey.
Yeah, it's not just chance. Everything coming out of the ground and everything you interact with is, it's not just chance that it's there.
No, and that takes us back
It's part of a grand design.
Yeah, that takes us all back to the visionariness of Bruno back during the 10th century or something or other, where he looked out and he said, God is everywhere. And he saw the magic of the universe and the world and its connection. And when we get in, Kathy, you know, was great in how she points out that we've gotten into the not only the reductionism, but the Darwinism views of things, and how we need to, you know, wait, let's just enjoy the beauty of what is here and quit trying to distill it down to an individual thing.
Yeah, I love the amount of topic. I mean, it's amazing how in 6 chapters you can cover so many topics that you can find something that, you know, kind of speaks to you. Something will pop out that speaks to you. And then on top of it, for the person who wants that, you know, justification, there are so many good peer-reviewed studies. And then if you get the electronic version, there's hyperlink to it. If you know, I feel like you could get both the hard copy book and then have the ebook to like look up the hyperlinks for each of the studies.
Yeah, I use it that way.
All possible worlds, I think.
Yeah.
Really, to be able to get, like you said, something that grabs you. Okay. And so maybe that's an emotional reaction, or maybe that's a connection long, deep, buried into your cultural past. But now you've got this very smart brain here going, but wait a minute, let's see who said that and who studied that and who else thinks this and what did they find out? And you can just go click and be all the way down all sorts of persons of heavily researched paths as much as you want to do.
And that adds connection. a sense of community. We don't think of it necessarily that way, but when you can click that little hyperlink and find out that this thought in the back of your mind that's been kind of mulling around back there is grounded in science, that's freeing, it's liberating, and you feel less alone because somebody else is there supporting what you're thinking also.
Yeah, it makes me want to actually look into like all those research studies and kind of find the names of those people because they're like, it almost feels like allies.
I'm glad you think that, but if that's all you have to do in your life, Paul, we need to have another conversation.
Yeah,
that's all right. My favorite allies became, I was on a first name basis with a number of my favorite supporters, if you will, in my writings. And Tamara would say, listen, just go ahead and list that person because you mention him often enough. You know, he's like your grandfather now. You talk about him all the time. So, yes, I have my favorite allies out there.
So would you have, so I think, I think the book is so great. I'm super happy that you shared it with me. I am really looking forward to getting a copy for my nurse's unit. I'm trying to get all the other ones in our bargaining unit to get a copy. I think this is a really great tool for self-care. Would you two both be willing to share maybe like a big overall, like, you know, like a more of an overall intention of what your hope is for people who are picking it up and reading it?
Kathy, I'm going to let you go first.
Okay. Because one of the basic tenets of holistic nursing is self-care, like you pointed out, Paul. And that wasn't the entire purpose of the book for me, but this is a nurse and a nutritionist and who are writing. And I wrote this book for the nurses, okay? I wrote it for everybody else to have fun with and read because everybody eats, right? But for me, I want the nurses to nourish themselves.
Yeah, me too.
You know, and that's why I was, you know, this all started because of my relationship with nurses and realizing the incredible history of nurses, their connection, their deep, deep connection with nutrition. And yet it's a tool that they aren't utilizing fully for themselves in their own life and their ability to utilize it fully in their practice. And then what I wanted to scream out, there is a reason to celebrate. There is hope when I listened to all of them. And I was so happy at the end of the conference to see the smiles on their faces, the spring in their steps, to see how they had rejuvenated from just that time away. Where the conference is held, it's an electronic free area, so nobody could be on their phones. Nobody was being bugged by their kids or their spouses or work, being on call. Everybody had a chance to just unwind that spring that was wound so tight. And so for me, I wanted to give people hope, a chance to take a breath and have some hope. And it's the first time in writing a book, this is my third one, that I have been compelled to write a closing poem. And the closing poem is Arms Open Wide. And this is what I want people to be able to feel by the time they've read the last words of our book, is this sense of hope. As the seasons change, the trees show us how to change with gusto, grace, and ease, how to dance on the wind and float in the breeze, how to accept change, and how to celebrate. We all have so much to celebrate in our lives, and we're so bogged down by the gunk that we can't always see what we have to celebrate. And I want the nurses to be able to celebrate.
I love that so much. Thank you for sharing that. I think we've talked about this. I just want to thank you two both for coming on and sharing the book with me. I'm really happy with it. And I'm really hoping that a lot of other people pick this one up. Now, how can people follow your work and how can they find the book?
So the book is available on Amazon.com as well as Barnes & Noble. It is available in fully functioning ebook through my website, yourwholenutrition.com. If you didn't get that, all they have to do is type in Tamara Carr, TamaraKarr, and you will see my name a frightening amount of times on a Google search. But what you're looking for is my website, yourwholenutrition.com. And so that's also where the course is housed and that goes along with the book. Then if somebody wants a autographed copy, they can purchase it through my website and we'll autograph it and send it out to them by standard post. So Barnes & Noble, Amazon are the two easiest, fastest ways. Matter of fact, folks had the books from Amazon in 3 days. It took Kathy and I 3 weeks before we actually had our print copies to autograph to send to people. Right. So there were people sending us boxes of books to autograph, uh-huh. and we hadn't even seen our copies of the books yet coming from the publisher. So, and then, you know, if you've got a bookstore that you think would like to carry this, if you've got a school, we are trying to get it into as many of the nursing programs as we can. Because nurses need to learn this from the start, not when they're burned out and flames coming out of their ears at the end.
That's usually when we find it.
Yeah. So if we start getting this information on self-care and the tools that are available and the ways of changing our perspective early on in people's careers, then maybe by the time they've been at it 25 years, they won't have a laundry list of physical challenges that are a mirror of the worst patients they take care of.
And Kathy, where can people follow what you're doing?
I don't have a website. I am a bit of a, what would you call me, Tam? I'm a social media hermit. How do you like that?
No, she's a very smart woman who's recognized that social media is not a viable form of communication.
My own email is kbell@bellsoft.com. I do have a business name. It's called Northern Light. It doesn't matter whatever site you get me at. I don't even know. If you Google me, I have no idea what happens because I've never Googled myself. I have absolutely no interest. I've seen more damage than good from most of the people I know that are involved heavily on social platforms, although that's not speaking as a business person, but just as an individual. And I really have – Tam asked me to do something at one point, but it would have involved joining a Facebook group. And I said, you know, I've been successful at making my life work up till now without joining a Facebook group, and I'm not sure I'm going to do it for you.
And Tamara, you actually offer like courses on your site, correct?
We do. We've got the Holistic Nutrition for You, HN4 and the U, Our Journey with Food. And so all of this stuff we're talking about here was that it really began with that program. You know, most people write a book and then do a program. I have a tendency apparently of doing things ass backwards. So I'm the breech baby in the world of books. And so there's like, over 30 videos, 20-minute videos. We made a point of doing them in a time frame that was sustainable for people. You know, I know that if I have to sit through a webinar and it's a death by PowerPoint, I am, like everybody else, only going to get 1% to 5% of what I hear. And we can sit and watch a 2-hour movie and really enjoy it. But when it comes to work stuff, if you're not really passionate about it, like Kathy and I are about our subjects in this book, nobody wants to sit through a 2-hour presentation. So I broke it down into 20-minute bites, just like we broke everything down in the book to something that was, you know, a mouthful here and there that gives you a nice little flavor and taste and an awe moment.
Well, thank you so much. Is there anything else you'd like to close out with?
We're working on getting the program to be CE accredited through the Oregon Holistic Nurses. And so we do have some CE available already. but we're still in the process of getting the program where it's got continuing ed credits attached to it.
Because we know that that is a huge impetus for nurses to be able to take the time, spend money, those two things right there. At the end of that time that they have spent and paid for, they'd like to see certificate or continuing education credit for that time. So we're very, very mindful of that and are working in that direction.
I think that's like a really good, important part of this. It's an important part to join a nurses association. So I am definitely leaning towards, you know, I lean towards the Holistic Nurses Association because that is a passion for me. But it's important to join, you know, whatever association it is, because then they can offer educational opportunities for other people.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know, when we're talking about holistic nursing, holistic nutrition, what I like to tell people is to think of it this way. We can all play a kazoo. It might not be the prettiest sound in the world, but we can walk around with a kazoo and make noise. But when we get together, when we join with our peers, when we come together with a group of other people who have other ideas, some of them are, some of them not, then all of a sudden we have the synergy of all of this extra energy and it becomes a philharmonic orchestra. What we can gain by being part of a holistic organization allows us to learn so much more about ourselves and about our craft of healing and about people in general. Is just, it's phenomenal when you come together in a holistic way.
Yeah.
So the sum is greater than the whole of its parts.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love this so much. Thank you two so much for coming on. I had such a good time. You two are welcome back anytime.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to talk with you, Paul.
I appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And, you know, keep doing that self-care, and I think we're going to have to come up with a different word for it because sometimes the CE credit programs don't like that being used. But if you don't take care of yourself, you're not going to have anything left at the end of the day to take care of your patients and to support their families. And so everything begins with you first.
Yeah. Thanks again.
Thank you. All right.
Thank you.
Bye.
Take care. And finally, before we close out, just remember to follow Tamara on social media. You can find her on Facebook, and I'll put links for that up on the website or for the, you know, the hosting site for the podcast and in the show notes. Please give them a follow. Check out some of the classes if you're interested. I hope like some people read some of these books and maybe seek out different ways to tackle holistic care. And there's a lot of resources on Tamara's site. You can kind of follow Kathy's kind of just, you know, out there doing her own thing in retirement. And you can follow Kathy. Actually, you know, I recommend joining the Oregon Holistic Nurses Association to kind of keep up. Kathy will occasionally put up blog posts and do some self-care education for the membership there. And not to mention, if you, I think this is a good year for a lot of us to join our nurses organizations that are calling us this year, because a lot of there's going to be a lot of opportunity for them to provide online education. And by giving out that money, that can help grow some of that. So I hope everyone enjoyed the episode. I hope everybody checks out the book. I hope everybody orders the book. I hope everybody reviews the book. I hope everybody follows this Tamara on social media and subscribes to her newsletter. Please follow Revolution RN on Instagram. You can follow me on Facebook, and please share any episodes if you can. I'd like to see more of our peers thinking about some of the bigger questions for 2021. And thank you so much for joining me. Take care. Take care of yourself. Bye.